Welcome to Good Medicine Explained. I'm your host, Dr. James R. Brown. This is episode number 22 for the week of November 22nd, 2020. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my explanations of various health disorders and medical conditions. As a physician, I have come to realize that while our professional gift and talents are geared towards saving lives, what we accomplish more often is an extension of life beyond what natural circumstances would allow. However, the highest virtue in the healing process is to also improve the quality of that life which has been extended. With that principle in mind, my goal is to provide my listening audience with a mental picture of how our bodies normally function. And I describe a malfunctioning organ or biological system so that I can mention a few solutions the medical profession utilizes to mitigate some of those problems. Ultimately, my intention is to impress and motivate everyone to cultivate a lifestyle and wellness model that promotes optimum physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. One of the telltale signs of health for me as a clinician is how well a person is able to achieve and maintain sound sleep. I often ask my patients about the quality and quantity of sleep they're getting because it's a great inroad into discovering much more about a person's health risks. Sleep is a highly conserved behavior demonstrated across most animal species. Sleep is a normal physiologic state of reduced muscle activity, inhibited sensory input, and altered consciousness. During sleep, most of the body systems are in an anabolic state, helping to restore the immune, muscular, skeletal, and nervous systems. When we speak of sleep, we typically identify it as having a pattern or architecture. Sleep is generally categorized into two different states, non-REM and REM sleep. Non-REM sleep has three different subgroups, N1, N2, and N3. And the REM sleep has only one phase. Approximately every 90 to 120 minutes, we cycle between non-REM and REM sleep periods. In a typical 7-hour sleep period, this cycling repeats itself 4 to 6 times. The first cycle starts with the transition from an awake state to stage N1, then N2, then N3, and finally REM sleep. The percentage of N3, the deep sleep, generally decreases over the course of the night, with the largest percentage of the N3 sleep occurring in the first half of the night. As the cycles continue, the percentage in REM sleep generally increases in duration. Sleep architecture varies over the lifespan of an individual. Newborn infants can sleep 16 to 18 hours per day in short blocks of time without a clear day and night rhythm, which we call circadian rhythm. Infants tend to enter sleep through REM as opposed to non-REM sleep. Around 3 months of age, we begin to develop a day-night cycle or circadian rhythm, and we enter sleep through non-REM sleep, the N1, N2, N3. Total sleep time slowly decreases for an infant, eventually reaching adult norms once they pass adolescence. Young adults typically sleep about 8 hours per night, with an elevated percentage of that sleep sent in stage N3. As humans transition to middle age and beyond, the percentage of N3 sleep decreases and the percentage of wake states and light sleep or N1 sleep will increase. It is notable, however, that the percentage of REM sleep is fairly stable throughout adulthood. Even more surprising, the total amount of time required by young adults and older adults does not appear to be dramatically different. Back in the 1930s, the initial stages of sleep were first identified and described. Then, in 1968, formal rules for staging sleep were established, due mostly in part to the development of a polysomnogram. A polysomnogram is a formal study of the physiologic behaviors of sleep. During a polysomnogram, several different sensors of physiologic behavior are applied to measure and categorize sleep into various stages of depth. In 2007, most sleep laboratories adopted terminology and scoring rules from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. That's the AASM. All sleep laboratories accredited by the AASM are required to use the AASM scoring manual and guidelines for reporting uniform sleep studies. Scoring of sleep stages typically occurs in 30-second intervals or epochs based on the American Academy of Sleep Medicine scoring rules. Current rules mandate the use of an EEG, which is an electroencephalogram, for recording brainwave activity, a EMG, or electromyogram, for recording muscle tone, and an EOG, which is an electrooculogram, for detecting eye movements to help determine the stages of sleep. As mentioned earlier, the sleep stages are traced by measuring the brainwave activity. When we're awake, we tend to have longer brainwave function, and as we fall into deeper levels of sleep, the brainwaves become shorter and shorter. So in a waking state, your brain waves are going to be representative of what is called beta waves. And beta waves are wavelengths of more than 13 hertz. As we begin transitioning into sleep, the N1 stage, we enter what is called alpha waves, which are typically 8 up to 13 hertz of frequency. And this is your light sleep. Next, the N2 stage has theta brain waves, which measure somewhere between 4 to 8 hertz. And this is the light sleep that we enter into before going to deep sleep. The delta wave is anywhere from 0 to 3.99 hertz of wavelength, and this is the low, deep, slow movements. And then, of course, the REM sleep reflects short waves, anywhere from 0.5 to 2 hertz of wavelength. Now, in the waking state, adults are typically awake for about two-thirds to three-fourths of a 24-hour day cycle. As the activities and responsibilities of a day wind down, people tend to recline, close their eyes. And it's at this time when the brain waves slow down to a stable alpha rhythm. This rhythm is the bridge between the sleep and wake states. And when the rhythm slows even further, sleep has begun. The stage N1 sleep, which is the bridge between awake and light sleep, is characterized by low amplitude and mixed EEG frequencies, somewhere between 4 to 7 hertz, as mentioned earlier. And eye movements are typically slow and rolling. The N1 non-REM sleep stage is the faintest or lightest stage of sleep. Patients can awaken from this stage without perceiving that they were actually asleep. N1 sleep typically accounts for 5 to 10% of the total sleep time in young adults. Next, we move to the N2 stage, which generally comprises the largest percentage of total sleep time in a normal middle-aged adult, typically 45 to 55% of the night. It's characterized by the theta waves with frequencies consistently between 4 to 7 hertz. It's at this stage, N2, of sleep that medications like benzodiazepines can increase the period of time of N2 sleep. Next, we go into N3 stage, typically referred to as deep sleep or slow wave sleep. And this stage is characterized by low frequency, high amplitude, delta waveforms. It typically accounts for 10 to 20% of the total sleep time in young to middle-aged adults, and it will decrease with age. The N3 stage tends to occur more in the first half of the night, and particularly at the beginning of the night, since the slow wave activity during sleep represents the homeostatic drive to sleep. It's often more difficult to arouse sleepers when they're in the stage of N3 sleep compared with N1 or N2. During the N3 stage of sleep, this is the time that humans secrete small bursts of growth hormone. There's another hormone called prolactin, which is actually secreted in all stages of sleep, even when we take short naps. N3, the deep sleep, is a typical time for what is known as the non-REM parasomnias, such as sleepwalking. Next, you get into the famous REM sleep, which is characterized by three primary features requiring the EEG, the EMG, and the EOG. It's a low-voltage mixed EEG with sawtooth pattern waves, somewhere between 2 to 6 hertz. REM sleep is defined during this stage, where your eyes have what are called conjugate but irregular, sharply peaked movements with an initial phase less than 500 milliseconds. The EMG will demonstrate what is called atonia, indicating an inactivity of all voluntary muscles except for the extraocular muscles and the diaphragm to help you breathe. Alpha motor neurons are directly inhibited. And so this is interesting research as far as unique animals such as bears, which can sleep literally for months at a time. And it's curious as to how they're able to maintain their involuntary movement. Several sleep disorders, or what we call parasomnias, have been characterized based on the physiologic events that happen during sleep or whether they happen to occur predominantly in the REM state or the non-REM state of sleep. If an event happens while falling asleep, we call that hypnagogic. Hypna meaning sleep and gogic meaning falling asleep. If an event happens when you're awakening, then we call that hypnopompic, and that means it occurs during the time when you're awakening. So these non-REM related sleep disorders or parasomnias are more likely to occur in the first half of the night, often within the first 1 or 2 hours, when the stage of N3 deep sleep is most common. During this period, it's more prevalent for people to sleepwalk, to have bruxism or clenching of their jaw and grinding of their molar teeth. It can also be a time when people have confusional arousals or nightmares. In contrast, the REM-related sleep disorders or parasomnias tend to occur more commonly in the second half of the night when REM sleep percentage is higher. Conditions such as obstructive sleep apnea may also be more prominent in the second half of the night when the REM-related physiologic changes worsen this sleep disordered breathing. It's not uncommon for people to have nightmares in the REM sleep, or they can have sleep paralysis, which again is a result of the atonic state when you're in the REM sleep. Remember, only the eyes and the diaphragm typically move during REM sleep. But sometimes a person can awaken and have paralysis. Narcolepsy is a very common and recognized sleep disorder. It occurs during REM sleep and very early in the sleep architecture pattern. REM sleep occurs soon after the initial sleep onset, which suggests that a person does have narcolepsy, but it could also be a feature of someone who has depression or they're having REM rebound sleep following a medication withdrawal, or for people that have a circadian rhythm disorder and they tend to sleep during the day and they tend to stay active and alert during the night. Sleep fragmenting disorders like obstructive sleep apnea or periodic limb movements, movements that occur when a person is asleep and awakens them, often increase the number of sleep stage changes, and they may completely disrupt the normal cycling of sleep. A mood can also affect sleep, such as major depression, which can shorten the latency to your REM sleep. As noted earlier, people go right from light sleep into deep REM sleep with depression. Obstructive sleep apnea is usually caused by the muscle atonia. Again, the muscles aren't moving, which impairs the upper airway patency, the muscles around the throat and neck. And this can exacerbate the frequency of obstructive events because the muscle tissue around the airway starts to close down. Obstructive sleep apnea tends to be more prominent in the second half of the night when the REM-related physiologic changes are increased. For people that have certain pulmonary diseases like COPD or a neuromuscular disorder, they rely more on their intercostal or rib muscles and accessory muscles of their chest to help them breathe and ventilate. So when they get into the REM state, this atonic period can render the intercostal and accessory muscles inadequate to support proper oxygenation. And so they don't ventilate, they don't get oxygen, and their oxygen levels drop during their sleep period. Another disorder called REM sleep behavior disorder can affect a few percent of individuals who will literally act out their dreams when they are in their REM state. And this is due to a lack of atonia, or blockage of muscle movement. This can result in injuries to the sleeping individual or their bed partner. Naturally, I want to mention just a brief comment about medications, because ingestion or withdrawal from certain medications can have dramatic effects on our sleep architecture. REM sleep can be delayed or suppressed by alcohol, by sedative hypnotic drugs, by barbiturates, by anticonvulsant drugs, by beta agonists, or by antidepressants in the monoamine oxidase inhibitor class, or the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor class. Medications that have prominent anticholinergic effects, meaning they block some of the normal secretory function of the body, can also delay or suppress REM sleep, in which people will have few or no dreams. REM sleep can actually be increased, in which people have more dreams than usual, by withdrawal from alcohol, benzodiazepines, antidepressants, or the like. I just wanted to provide a little recommendation for good sleep hygiene and how we can enable ourselves to get consistently better sleep every night, or for the majority of nights. As far as sleep hygiene is concerned, one of the most important factors is to make sure that you wake up at the precise same time every morning. Some people are erratic with their sleeping behavior. They'll wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning one day, and then 9:30 another day, and on the weekend they might sleep until 11 or 12 noon. And this pattern of irregular sleep can disrupt what your body senses as regulated and consistent. So in order to break that up, it's extremely important that you set your alarm clock to the earliest hour that you have to wake up in any of the 7 days of the week, and just consistently wake up at that same time. Another important factor for good sleep is to get about 40 minutes of moderate intensity exercise at least 4 days a week. Again, this physical exhaustion that you put your body into assists in relaxing the physical body for sleep. It's recommended that you minimize consuming simple carbohydrates to avoid the wide fluctuations in blood sugar levels. Sometimes there can be what's known as a crash, where your blood sugar suddenly declines from a high value of 200 down to 60. And in that fluctuation, that can disrupt sleep patterns. Everyone probably knows to try to avoid caffeine and other stimulants several hours before going to bed, because they could keep you alert and awake and diminish your ability to get sleep onset. It's also very important to create a nighttime system and pattern and in an environment in your bedroom that enhances restful sleep. We recommend that you reduce the volume of music or the television, and you try to avoid watching disturbing television programs or movies. It's probably important to set a time when you turn your cell phone off or dim. It's really nice if you can get dimmer lights for your bedroom so that you can tone down the intensity of light and relax yourself. Possibly reading a good book before going to bed will start to induce a relaxation pattern, or taking a warm shower or bath before you turn into the bed. It's a good idea to try and set the room temperature in your bedroom to around 68 degrees, which is considered an ideal temperature to support sleep. Also, you might want to dim or turn off your LED lights to the clock and other electrical items. And it's probably not a bad idea to consider using aromatherapy, basically different scents that can be perfused in your bedroom. And scents that are recognized for having relaxation include lavender, vanilla, chamomile, bergamot, which is kind of an orange tree scent, geranium, or roses. And lastly, it might be helpful if you're having difficulty to play a very low volume, peaceful melody, or even bedtime stories that are narrated in a consistent frequency, which we call pink noise. Some people prefer listening to natural outdoor sounds like rain or a brook or being by the ocean. And others are actually interested in listening to ASMR, which is Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response. These are sounds that elicit kind of a relaxing sensation in the body and can help support and promote sleep. So let me give you a couple of the take-home points from this discussion. Number one, the average healthy adult needs 1 to 2 hours of deep sleep for every 8 hours of sleep that they are in bed. Number two, sleep has a particular progression or architecture. We move from a waking state into non-REM sleep, which has three stages, N1, N2, N3, and then finally into REM sleep. And this pattern repeats itself 4 to 5 times every night during our sleep. Point number three, a polysomnogram is a special sleep study that records brainwave activity using an EEG, muscle tone using an EMG, and eye movements using an EOG, as well as the breathing pattern, your heart activity, which is recorded on an EKG, oxygen saturation levels that are in the blood, and body movements. Point number four, older adults spend more time in wakeful and N1 light sleep and less time in deeper N3 sleep. However, the time spent in REM sleep is fairly stable throughout adulthood. And lastly, good sleep hygiene includes waking up every day at the same time, getting sufficient exercise and nutrition during the day, and setting or creating a relaxing mindset and environment for sleep. If this particular topic or any of the previous episodes have provoked questions for you, be reassured that I do regular Q&As on my Instagram account at jrbrownmd, where you may submit your questions there through direct message. However, I emphasize that I do not serve as a replacement or substitute for your own personal physicians, nor do I provide individualized consultations outside of my practice. I encourage everyone listening to get your annual flu shots if you haven't done so already. Remember, symptoms from the annual flu are indistinguishable from the coronavirus symptoms. As I regularly do, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my podcast team, Lauren and Natalie, who really are responsible for making this podcast possible. Thursday this week is Thanksgiving Day. The year 2020 has included some of the most intense social, political, and health challenges, both nationally and internationally, for many decades. However you may have experienced 2020, I pray that you remain safe and healthy. We still have a lot to be thankful for. Until our next opportunity, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be loved, and may you have a peaceful heart.